Well, good morning, everybody. Apologize for my tardiness. We're going to get right underway for the sake of your time and for our guests this morning. And I do have a couple announcements at the end, so we'll cover those after we let Dr. Buse go for the day. So, again, I want to welcome everybody to another wonderful edition of Saturday AM Live. This is Vance Rogers, your host, and it's always a joy of mine trying to keep into a cycle that we have of at least every month or every 6 weeks to have somebody from the medical field with us. And today we have Dr. Jim Buse, who is back. It's family practice, correct?
That's correct, Ben.
Okay, I just want to make sure I didn't put my computer on yet this morning, and I want to remember exactly how it said. And you hail from north of us. It's outside of, is it Calgary?
Calgary, Alberta.
Okay, all right. So let's go. Well, first of all, welcome to the call.
Thanks very much. Good to be here. Good morning, everyone.
And you've had an hour or so to get a cup of Joe in and get the brain juices flowing. Some of us on the West Coast are still, actually, some of us are still horizontal, listening with an earpiece in our ear, so I've been told. And so take us back to, I'm curious why you went into the medical field.
Boy, that's going back a long way. I went into the medical field because the man I admired most outside of my family was a medical doctor, and he lived a few houses from us, and he was my doctor, and every time I went to him, he seemed to know exactly what was wrong with me, and I was very impressed with a profession where he could know absolutely everything about absolutely everything. And so little did I know that that when I went into medicine and came out of medicine, I would know a very narrow spectrum of knowledge that would help me with some of people's problems, but certainly not with all of people's problems.
Interesting. Okay. You share that, and I think back to the gentleman who was our family doctor, and I definitely would not approach anything to do with medicine because he was not a very kind gentleman. He actually made our life miserable. We always, my brothers and I, always dreaded going to see him because of his bedside manner. But so with that in mind, what was it like entering into the medical field after college and I'm sure an internship and then going that direction?
Well, it was a wonderful experience for me, Vance. I love being a family doctor. I started out in medicine when I was 25 years old, and I attracted young families to me, and so they were young families, and I was having my young family at the same time. And as I grew older, they grew older. When they were having their children, I was having my children, one of the wonderful things I got to do in medicine was I delivered over 3,000 babies, and every moment of that was a joy to me.
Oh, of course.
The rest of my practice was also a joy to me. I loved medicine, and I loved being a family doctor for my whole career.
Okay. And that took you up until, what was it, 2000 that you actually officially retired?
I actually left my medical practice in 2000. I started to change. I started to look for some other way to help my patients. And actually, about 5 years before that, I can remember coming home and speaking to my wife and saying, you know, I'm doing just what I said I wouldn't do as a young doctor. I was writing prescription after prescription for people as they got older and they had aches and pains. And it got to the point where I was actually having my anti-inflammatory prescriptions pre-printed to save me time because it seemed everybody had problems with their joints and aches and pains all over their bodies. And I said to my wife, you know, I really want to find some other way to help people that doesn't necessarily involve drugs because I'm helping these people and I'm killing them at the same time with the side effects. And I began to study for about 4.5 years, mostly nutritional, things, and I really couldn't find anything that I could put my scientific mind behind, and because I couldn't put that behind it, I wasn't going to put my heart behind it, and if I didn't put my heart behind it, I wasn't going to introduce it to my practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't until my dad had a great experience with a magnetic product from Nikan that I began to learn about an area of medical prevention and recovery that I didn't know about prior to that time.
Now, is that so? And I think if I remember correctly, it was your sister that introduced it to your father.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Okay, so it came via your sister.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it.
Okay, and now when you use the word "great experience" with the products, how great?
Well, he'd had a stroke some 10 years earlier, and he was left with some post-stroke agony in his right wrist, and he was on anti-inflammatories and painkillers, and with not much relief. And when he got on the Nikan magnetic product, he had relief within 30 minutes to an hour.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was quite an experience. So he asked me to go and investigate this, and I did. I investigated the company first, of course, and the company was rock solid. And then a couple of patients of mine had mentioned this to me about a year and a half before, and during a physical, I'd asked them what was exciting in their lives. In their lives, and they told me they were selling magnetic beds, and I said, I just pretended I didn't hear that. I just said I don't want to go there, and because I'd never heard of that, and of course there's good reason that I'd never heard of it, because the pharmaceutical companies, of course, don't want the medical profession to know about this. But I contacted them, and went out to their house, and they showed me the products, and then they took me to a horse clinic where they showed me a couple of horses who had back pain. I have some horses, and so I knew about horses. They had back pain, and they used a mag boy on these horses. And half an hour after they started mag boying these horses, they brought the horses back, and they demonstrated that they had no pain left. And I went, wow. Because, you know, animals don't have any placebo effect.
I knew you were going to throw that word in there.
Yeah, animals just want to get better. They just want relief.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I saw that work on animals, I began to take it seriously. And I got a couple of pairs of mag steps. I gave one pair to my brother-in-law, who had a problem with his hip, and he got a remarkable relief from his discomfort that he was having in his hip, and I tried them on myself, and I had a little osteoarthritis in my right foot from years of being a long-distance runner, and I got relief as well. And at that point, we thought everybody was going to get relief instantly, and we subsequently found out that that wasn't true. Although these products begin to work on people instantly, it takes some time for some people to feel the effect of these products. Most people will have an effect within the first 5 to 7 days, about 75% of people. About 99% of people will notice a positive effect within a month. Certainly within 3 months, virtually everyone will have a positive effect if they want to have a positive effect.
Okay.
Because, of course, there are a certain percentage of people who, for one reason or another, don't want to get relief from their problems.
Well, they don't have anything to talk about if they did.
Well, sometimes it's not just that. Sometimes there are psychosocial reasons for remaining ill. I had one woman who borrowed a Kenko seat from me. And she brought it back after about 4 or 5 days, and she said, "Dr. Buse, I can't use this." And I said, "Why?" She said, "It took my pain away." And she said, "I'm on disability." She said, "I'm a single mom. I've got four kids." And she said, "If I go back to work, I'll have less money after I pay for child care expenses, then I will if I go back to work. And she said, I have to support these children myself. She said, it's all I can do to put food on the table. And she said, I'm stuck. So it's not just people. It's not just people who get some, you know, psychological secondary. But sometimes people are trapped by our system.
Sure, sure. Now you said something, Dr. Buse, that I just a question popped in my mind about getting to the point in your medical practice that looking, at least you were open to that point because it kind of went against the moral obligation that you had of helping people, and when you said, I love my job, delivering babies and everything, but getting to that point of writing prescriptions and the classic of even having them pre-printed, do you feel that, or I guess if from a medical standpoint, those that are in the medical field, and here I'm asking you a question to answer for somebody else, but those who don't have a problem with writing prescriptions, How do you see that? I mean, wouldn't someone be more open to, because we know that, you know, one drug after the other is just going to further complicate things. And I just, one of the popular ones I just heard this week is getting pulled because of they're actually admitting that people taking it for this problem is actually making their bones softer and causing brittle bones, so they're pulling it. It's too many people having. But from a medical doctor, how do people, I guess, in the field justify that, well, we'll just keep getting the drugs out there for those who don't know any better, and we'll go from there?
Well, Lance, it's like the carpenter who only has a hammer. To him, everything looks like a nail. And so, most people in the medical profession went into the medical profession so they could help people, and they want to do something significant. And I'll tell you, when your best friend comes to you and he says, Jim, I can't get downstairs in the morning because my knees hurt me so bad, you want to help that person.
You
reach into your medical toolkit, and in your medical toolkit are pharmaceuticals. So that's the way you're trained, and the medical world is becoming more and more open all the time to alternative and complementary methods of treatment that perhaps we weren't aware of through our training.
Sure.
And so I was fortunate enough to teach at the University of Calgary, and I taught young medical students, and I taught them that never to tell people there's nothing more I can do for you, but rather to tell them, you've reached the limit of my knowledge with your problems. Go out there and find something else, because there's got to be something else out there that can help you, but I'm not the person with that knowledge of that information. So go find out whatever it is that must hurt you, because in the rest of the world, they don't use pharmaceuticals in the same way that we do in North America.
Now, when you made that transition, you said you retired in 2000. How many years had you been in NECAN before you came to that point of decision?
I'd been in NECAN about 15 months, and I never considered doing it as a business, Vance. And in fact, I didn't really do it as a business for about 6 years after I got out of active medical practice. I was doing it on a very part-time basis, and still making a fairly good income with it, but mostly selling product. And a man who's become a good friend of mine, Reed Nelson, came up to Calgary and talked about helping people through the business, and not just helping them financially through the business, but helping them health-wise through the business. And he taught me, although it took some teaching, over a period of months, that I could help more people if I treated this like a business than if I treated it like a part-time product-oriented business.
Absolutely.
Product-oriented hobby.
And I would imagine as a full-time family practice doctor, you probably didn't spend a lot of time dabbling with other network marketing companies.
I had no experience with network marketing. One time, back when I was an intern, back in 1970, a couple took my wife and I to a... They invited us out to dinner. And I thought, oh, good, we're going to have friends. And because I was from Toronto, and I moved out to Calgary to do my internship, and I intended to go back to Calgary, back to Toronto after my internship. But when we got out to that meeting, we were in the basement of a hotel with 29 other couples who'd been duped into going out for a chicken dinner, and it was with a network, a famous network marketing company of the 70s that's still around, and I was very disappointed in that. So, but apart from that, that was the only experience I'd had with network marketing, and because I wasn't building a network, at that time I was just really giving people products that I thought would help them.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really know anything about network marketing.
Okay. Now, going back to that transitional phase, when Reed made that comment, and I know how Reed is because I live in the same city as he do, and we see each other almost on a weekly basis, and he's extremely infectious, especially asking questions like that, or making statements, that you can impact more people with the business, and it's true. Larry Prophet was with us last week, and he asked the question of one of our wellness consultants, who he simply said, comparing people. And he said, let's take this person who is very good in their field, and let's look at Dave Johnson. Which one has been able to inspire and impact more people's lives? And the gal came immediately back and said, well, of course, Dave Johnson. Because he's, duplicated himself and others. So with that in mind, I'm curious, what was the learning curve for you when you decided, hey, I think maybe I should make the transition from just introducing people to the products to actually showing them, hey, there's a business side to this. What did you do differently at that point?
Well, what I did differently, Vance, was I took a business focus instead of a product focus. And so... when people come to us now, whether or not they're coming to us for the business, we always do the same business-focused presentation. And so if someone is interested in the business, I say, look, like every good business has a system, we have a system too.
Mm.
And would it be okay if I showed you that system? So I always ask permission, and they say, sure. And if they're coming to me with a non-business focus, I'll say, look, I know you're not interested in the business right now, but this is a business, and every business, good business, has a system, and we have a system too. Would it be okay if I showed you what we do with someone who's interested in the business? And at that point, I bring out the opportunity brochure with Nikan, and I show them very briefly, sometimes in as little as 90 seconds, that this company is real. It's been around for 35 years now. It's in 35 plus countries. There are tax advantages to this, doing this as a business, and that people, I always read that wonderful line, since 1989, over 100 wellness businesses have made over $1 million in this business.
Mm.
Many consultants have made over $1 million in a single year. And then I flip to the very back page, and I say, make no mistake, we'd really like you to join us. and so that doesn't take very long.
Sure.
But they now have this concept that this is a solid company, that people actually do make money out of, and that there are tax advantages. And everyone, especially in this age of recession, everyone, even not in recessionary times, loves tax deductions. So we find that, and then we go through our explanation of the technologies and a brief demonstration, and I mean brief demonstration of the products. And people can, if they're looking at buying a wellness home, oftentimes have difficulty conceiving of themselves, if money is tight, spending $5,000 or $6,000 on a wellness home. because that would be, in their minds, discretionary spending. Like you would decide to buy a new couch or something. Sometimes it's hard for people to do things for themselves. But if we talk about an investment to start a business that can return your money in short order and produce income on an ongoing basis, and in fact get you to the point where you can have some financial control over your lives, $5,000 seems like a much more doable amount to start that business with.
Mm-hmm.
So that totally changed the results that we were getting. Now, I want to tell you that Calgary is an oil town. And
okay.
And so the recession didn't hit us until about a year and a half or almost 2 years after it became evident in the United States.
Okay.
But it now has had an effect, as it's had everywhere in the world. The global economy affects us here, too. And where 3 or 4 years ago people almost literally used to flip me their Visa card and continue their conversation and says, order everything. They no longer do that. Now they think about it more, but they're much more amenable to the idea of doing this as a business than they were at any other time. Many people, even here in Calgary, many people are having financial difficulties, and a great question that I ask some people is, who do you know that you care enough about that could use an extra $500 or $1,000 in the beginning, maybe after a year ending up at a few thousand dollars at the end of each month, that amount of money would help them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's people know a lot of people like that.
Yeah. I just finished reading Robert Kiyosaki's book,
sure.
Business for the 21st Century, which consequently Reed gave me a copy of it while mine was in the mail arriving. And so, but what's so fascinating about the book is exactly what you're saying, is that now people more than ever before, because the standard way of doing things, of exchanging time for dollars or looking for that great career with all the benefits and the package and the salary and, you know, whatever, people are starting to, you know, realize it's, you know, it's like the first time as a parent when your child continually does the same thing wrong but tells you that they won't do it again. You start to, you know, after that second, third, fourth time, you start to, the trust factor, it starts to be waning, you know, wanes away. And, you know, I think we're doing the same thing in our culture, not just here in North America, but all over the world, that we're realizing that, hey, this system of exchanging time for money, of me as an employee trusting somebody else for my financial future, it isn't working. I've got to take ownership of my own. And we're seeing that. Now, Jim, you just recently, actually in the month of April, you made the rank of diamond.
Yep.
Which again, and I love the fact that you pointed out that when you started, it was mostly just introducing to the people to the products, which we find countless times that people can get to silver without really any business experience, because we do that by generating volume. But then making that transition from silver and beyond, it's a totally different thing. And the way you pointed out is introducing people, even in less than 90 seconds, to the possibility that, hey, there's income that can be earned. Was there, for you, let me ask you this, how long were you at platinum?
Oh, forever.
Okay.
I was at platinum for about 9 years.
Okay.
Because I didn't do it as a business approach. And you can make some money at platinum. You can't make very much money, but you can make enough money to pay some bills and make some payments and have a little cash. But if you can get to platinum by making silvers who take a product focus. The problem with that is that it's not sustainable, and you're always out there. Because every month, if you've got a product focus, you start off at zero, and you have to start building your volume again. Whereas if you take a business approach, And since we take it from the very first moment we start with people, they don't know any other way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't
exactly.
They don't see a product way. And our product presentation is about 20 minutes long. And we show sleep, water, air, and nutrition in a presentation we call the SWAN presentation. And we show the products very effectively, but very briefly, because people are looking at these products from a business point of view as opposed to a health point of view. We have monthly trainings where we train people not on products but on business. They learn the products by using them themselves, on themselves and on their family. And just because there's lots of talk about product around, so they gradually become educated about the product usage, but because we take a business focus from the beginning, that's what they do. Now when you build a network, because that's why it's called networking, we don't have to start off at zero every month because we have a bunch of people out there making a significant difference to themselves and their families, but also making a significant difference for the families that they bring into their business in building their networks. And so you don't start off at zero every month.
Well, you've built up the residual base, so it's there.
Yes, and hopefully it's growing all the time.
Mm-hmm. Now, and again, I go back to using the word transition, just like going from a product proponent of somebody who only is talking about products to making a transition to the business. Going from 9 years as a platinum to realizing, okay, hey, this, because again, you can make that transition from silver to gold, even to platinum, by building silvers, first level, and then making the next step up to diamond. You have to take a little different approach. What was your greatest challenge? Because there had to be a point in time where you said, I'm tired of being platinum, I want to make diamond. What was your greatest challenge at that point of making that, again, looking back at as a medical professional, because I didn't think you learned anything about business or network marketing in medical school, did you?
We didn't spend a minute on business in medical school. And so for me, I had been a solo practitioner in a group practice, meaning I had group coverage with other doctors for night calls, but I was basically alone in my practice, and I engineered it that way. That's the way I wanted it to be, because I wanted to provide a style of practice that perhaps where it was more patient-focused than other doctors wanted. So for me, that made the quality of my practice very wonderful for me. However, in business, it didn't work that way. And it was when my wife encouraged me to find a mentor, and the person that I respected most in the business was Reed Nelson, and so through a wonderful series of events, I got connected with Reed, and having a mentor and building a team, taking a team approach, made all the difference. And that occurred over about a 3-year period of mentoring and building a team, and the results have been very gratifying.
And you said that when you do a monthly training and you focus in on the SWAN approach, but really again leading. I know leading is not the right word to use, but allowing people to see up front that there's a business potential with this. That's what we're looking for.
We don't really focus on the SWAN approach. The SWAN approach is what we do so that people can easily feel that they can duplicate our product presentations with sleep, water, air, and nutrition. But we take a business focus right from the very beginning, and so our trainings are on the business aspect of NECAN, not on the product aspects of NECAN.
Okay. So people understand that this is something to join for with the intention of actually generating income, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Wow, money's the root of all good. my wife and I are fortunate enough, blessed enough to be involved with a charity that we've been involved with for a long time, and my wife is the chairman of that charity. We give small loans to women and families in developing countries, and these loans are from $100 to generally $300.
Mm-hmm.
And these women start a new business with that loan that they could never get from anyone else, and with that business that they start, that becomes self-sufficient, they can feed themselves and their families, and they often have 6 or 7 kids, and so for the last 20 years we've been involved with that charity called Impact First.
Yep.
International.
Yep.
And it does wonderful things for people, and you can't do wonderful things for people without that kind of money to have available to do those wonderful things. So money's certainly not the most important thing in the world.
Yeah, you know,
it seems like all the important things, Vance, are involved with money.
Yeah, well, and that's what's so fascinating about Kiyosaki's book, the very last page. He clearly points out that the gap between the rich and the poor is getting wider, and that the only way to bring, literally, world peace is to tighten up that gap and introduce people to the idea, whether it's through network marketing, but I'm very familiar with the charity you're involved in, because we've got some dear friends that about every 4 to 6 months, they travel down to Nicaragua to do the same thing, to review all the accounts that they've set up with people that, and they're all $100 loans, and setting people up into business that there would be no way for them to get that kind of capital. And, you know, the beauty is that we can do that in the countries where NECN is established, is we can do the same thing. And I've got Herb Rapp lined up to be here on the call in a couple, actually next, or 2 weeks. And he recently came back from Colombia, which is a third world country, and seeing tremendous things take place, not just amongst the people who are in the wealthy category, but those who are, you know, dirt poor and able to start a business with this. One gentleman, well, I'm not going to spoil the surprise because his story is just amazing, but with the trimmings from Magsteps. I mean, that's what he started his business with. And Dr. Buse, one last question before we wrap this up. Where do you see this? Would you have a suggestion, because this always comes up, how do we lay people, what would be your best suggestion in talking to people in the medical field, doctors, nurses, chiropractics, what's the best way for us to approach them?
Well, it's a bit of a difficult question, because often people in the medical field are stuck in that medical field by the incomes they make, and it's difficult for them to imagine moving outside of the field that they're in. And so I think it's always best just to treat medical people like normal people, so that they can let them have a product experience. If they have a product experience, many doctors these days would like to augment their incomes, just like everybody else's incomes are in trouble. Theirs are too. And so when they see that the products work, and we have just irrefutable demonstrations of our products with for example, our thermographs and our osteodynamic study have tremendous, the Weintraub studies that are out there. These are studies that doctors are used to seeing in format, but never used to seeing in results. And so when they find those studies, when they see those thermographs, they're blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have a product experience themselves, they're blown away.
Mm-hmm.
And if you introduce it as a business as well, I think they'll be open to it just like anybody else is. Now, there are engineers who are not open to this, and there are accountants who are not open to this, and there are lay people who are not open to this. And those are not the people you want to go to. So knowing the difference between prospecting and recruiting is essential for everybody in their business. Prospecting is checking on or creating interest. And if you're checking on that with an interest with a medical professional or any other person, lay person or not, if they're not interested, go to someone who's interested. Your life will have a much better chance of being satisfying to you if you're not dealing with people who are not really interested in what you have to offer.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is great counsel, because how often do we spend too much time with people who aren't, and we really want it for them, but they don't want it for themselves. Just going back to the gal you'd mentioned that is on disability. You may want it, but when you're stuck, you can't, you know, you're not willing to change, and which is wonderful, wonderful advice. Well, Dr. Buse, I want to thank you. Appreciate this greatly, because you've given me a half a page of notes, and I know that everybody else listening, if they're a note taker, they will glean many, many things. And I love the way you utilize the business approach, again, in 90 seconds or less sometimes, to let people know that this is what it's about. And I can't help but think that with the Wellness Home Initiative and us, you know, reaching that goal of 1 million people in the next 5 years, so we can give away 10,000 wellness homes, we're right on track with that, letting people know, hey, why don't we get you registered up front? You know, why even focus on retail? Even though there's a great deal of money to be made on retail, but introducing people as a member or a wellness consultant to, hey, there's a business side to this. And so absolutely great, great counsel. Our guest this morning, if you missed the beginning, has been Dr. Jim Buse from Calgary, Canada. New diamond as of the last month. And again, thank you, Jim. Appreciate it greatly. And look forward to seeing you in Cancun.
We'll be there.
You'll be there. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go. And again, thank you so much. And I got a couple announcements I want to cover before we sign off this morning. So again, Dr. Jim Buse has been with us. And if you have somebody that you think would benefit, somebody either in the medical field or not, from what Jim has shared, you can catch the recording on simply going to www.saturdayamlive.com, and the recording is there, and give it a few hours, and it'll be up, and just look for Dr. Jim Buse and his story.